And daddy told me never let them see you struggle. Can't win the game if you run from the hustle, no. If anybody try to test me, you wanna square up. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Champions Way Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rains. Joined as always by Patrick Polo and Matt Bryce. Guys, how's your week been so far?
Not too bad, you know. Got to see a Florida State win yesterday, last night, so that's always fun.
What about you, Patrick? How you been this week?
It's been a busy week, and a lot of news flying through, seeing the men and the women win and lose, you know. So, see some promise there.
Yeah, it's odd to see the boys pull one out and the girls drop one, especially in the fashion they drop it, but... guys, I mean, really, you know, I want everybody, you know, watching, listening on the podcast to know really what we're about. And really here at Champions Way Sports, we kind of strive to provide, you know, the listeners, you know, really the best kind of dadgum coverage that's authentic for anybody's listening, really. And by doing so, we don't just cover one sport. We cover them all. I know there's a bunch of these podcasts and live streams that just cover football, 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 and that's it. So we like to cover it all. And when a seminal athlete or athletes do something, you know, they does do something or accomplish something that makes us all proud to be a Seminole, you know, we love to pay tribute, pay honor to that. So first question we're going to answer is, did Florida State add another national championship to the trophy case? That answer is yes. When Florida State's co-ed cheerleading team won the UCA-UDA National Championship Sunday to cap off a three-day competition in Orlando, the Seminoles' Golden Girls dance team finished third in the nation among Division 1A schools in jazz competition. This is actually the Seminoles' first at the UCA competition and first ever for a Seminole co-ed team. Florida State last won a national championship in cheerleading, which was an NCAA in 1997. So that kind of tells you about how long it's been. So congratulations to them. But we're going to kind of jump right over to kind of one of the topics. You know, last night the boys basketball team, they kind of swept, what was it, Notre Dame?
Mm-hmm.
They swept Notre Dame last night by, I think, 10 points. But they started strong, but then they kind of, in my eyes, and I mean, me and Matt, we all got a group chat, and I messaged something about Matthew Cleveland, and lo and behold, Matt was almost right. They almost gave it away. It came down to free throws, really. Matt, I mean, what's your thoughts on this season so far and what's been, like, hurting this program? Because this ain't the Florida State basketball program that we're used to seeing.
No, it's, you know, it's tough. And, you know, I'll start with the positive before I get to the negatives. I mean, like, Matthew Cleveland definitely, you know, his eighth double-double, and I think he's in a row of the year. You're seeing good things out of Worley at times and Cohen flashes at times, but ultimately the defense isn't where it should be. You know, it's not what we're used to seeing. You know, in that Virginia game this past Saturday, they left a guy wide open multiple times, and it's not like he's a one shot guy. Like he went off one game, excuse me. He's sort of like a 40% three-point shooter, and he was open most of the day. And you saw it again a little bit yesterday. They consistently can't guard the three. Bob Miller hasn't made a huge impact at all, and that's to be until it's the second game, third game back, excuse me. So you can't expect a whole lot out of the guy, but he's almost become a non-factor, in my opinion. He's a liability when he's out there, which is frustrating. It's tough because, you know, they had that large, you know, they went to Sweet 16 3 years in a row. And then last year compound with this year, it just feels like they've missed in recruiting. It feels like it's, you know, 2015, 2016 all over again, where they missed a few guys and it's not really panning out for them. And their problem, the biggest problem, I think, is the portal, is the transfer portal. That, fortunately, Florida State, as everyone knows, isn't the most financially lucrative university in the world. They don't have a ton of boosters like, you know, some of these SEC schools do. And they don't have the TV money, so it's tough for them to invest heavily in the basketball when they're trying to get football going. Obviously, football's doing much better. So it's got to be tough for Hamilton to when the environment changes 100%, and he's got at his age got to tool the whole thing all over again. So we'll see what happens, but it's been a tough watch. They look a lot better than they did. I mean, if you watch the first five games, they were unwatchable. And now that they're at least competitive, they just make simple mistakes. And obviously, the injuries to Cam Fletcher and a couple other players who are out for the year have really hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, last night, I mean, I think at one point they were up by like 24 points, you know, and then it come down to at the before it was like 2 minutes left in the game, it was down to, I think, a 7-point game.
Yeah, I mean, it was painful to watch. It was frustrating.
Yes. And to me, I mean, I agree with you. It's Baba Miller, you know, and I'm not going to knock the kid whatsoever. There was a lot of times that, I mean, from what I read, he's been practicing with them, but there was a lot of times last night that he would miss an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wouldn't screen when he needed to screen, or he wouldn't, you know, run the right, you know, pattern or motion or whatever. And yes, that's rust. That's not game action being in practices, but you should know what to do if all you've done is practice this far, you know. But I agree, you know, that to me, they're just not playing Leonard Hamilton basketball. They're not playing what we're used to seeing. And like you said, it transfer portal. I also think it's recruiting. I hate to say that, but because we have some of the top classes at times, but I think recruiting is just, I mean, it's down with them because, I mean, I've heard it out of coaches, you know, own mouths that Leonard Hamilton won't even look at a kid unless he's a certain height and a certain size. I mean, no matter what his ball handling or skills are, that if he ain't 6'1 or higher or 6'2 or higher, then he don't even want to look at him. But at his age, I mean, I just got a question. How much more does Coach Ham got in him? I mean, he's already like 74, I think it is, or he's up there. I mean, Patrick, I mean, what's your thoughts on the basketball team?
You know, I, like I said, I had that thing. I was going to do the fun poke of Fire Ham, give him another year. Can't defend the three to save our life right now. And it's tough. It's hard to watch the basketball because that used to, you know, when the football was down, at least the basketball is up. Would I trade football up over basketball every day? Yeah. But I would like them both to be good at the same time. Yeah. And the question you bring up is how much time does Ham have left? How much does he have in the tank? Are we going to have another Bowden-esque takeover? Are we going to force him out? There's some question marks there. And I think once we get some of these commitments done to the program, football program or baseball program, you know, are we going to start throwing some money towards the football now? Or some correction, basketball. Are we going to show our commitment there too? I know the Tuck is in desperate need of some more attention. I don't even know what's on the horizon for that. So, I mean, that thing could play into some of this recruiting too. I mean, some of these other high school or college stadiums or arenas are top notch to go play at. You know, the Yum Center is amazing up in Louisville. Plus, they have a bourbon bar there. Can't beat that. But looking at these, you know, what are we doing as our commitment to the program is another question to me. You know, what can we do to make it better?
I don't think they're going to force Ham out. I really think it sounds terrible, but out of the big three men's sports, I think basketball kind of sits squarely at third. I mean, I don't really see a scenario of them forcing him out. I mean, unless they have multiple seasons where they finish well below 500 and he won't give it up. But I mean, I've met Hamilton. He's a very classy guy, and I could see him, you know, walking out on his own. He knows when it's up. So I mean, I think I'll give him like two more years. If things don't turn around, he's probably going to leave on his own. The question is, you know, can you get a CY? You know, I don't think you can get Gates at this point, but can you get, like, you know, Michael Alford probably has a plan. They probably talked about it, but I don't see a scenario of them forcing it out, and you got to pause. Speaking of the Tuck, I mean, it's a lot better than it used to be. It's no true basketball arena. It never will be. But that's what they got. You know, I don't think they're ever going to get their own arena. That is what it is. So.
Yeah. I mean, the Tuck is used for so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when I took my state board to become a correctional officer for the state of Florida, I took it where fan day is or was for the football team. It was down in the basement. You know, they use it for so much. I just, you know, who do you get? You know, do you go after, like we mentioned before, the other coaches, like, you know, I mean, like everybody wants, you know, Charlie Ward or somebody like that, or another established college coach. We don't know. Honestly, don't. The girls have been doing good. That's a plus. They did drop, you know, the game to Louisville this past week, right at the end. Kind of a tale of two courts on that one. I mean, Patrick, I mean, what kind of so far this year, you know, what's kind of surprised you with the girls' team?
It was, you know, it was going to be interesting with, you know, Coach Stube with the transition year of how that was going to affect the girls program. And I think they've done a really good job of keeping them, keeping the team together. Our freshman Phenon, you know, doing her work, you know, she leads now for player of the weeks in ACC. So the girls, you know, really coming together. I don't think we're getting as much love. I haven't really followed them too closely to see, you know, some of the wins. The only game I really got to watch intently was the UConn massacre. And that was not fun to watch that one. But otherwise, seeing what they're doing, I think they're getting in the right groove, and I think we're headed in the right direction.
My question with the women's is how are they not ranked? I know they went 1-1 this past week, but I mean they did beat like a top 15 NC State team. I think they handled them pretty well at one point. I know they dropped to Louisville, but it's just weird that they've got this awesome player and they have a good record. And they're not even the top 25. It's just interesting. I don't know how women's basketball works. I don't really watch it a lot. I can't say I've watched a lot of FC women's basketball. So I'm going to try to watch tomorrow night, to be honest. I should check that girl out. But, you know, we'll see.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, Coach Wyckoff, I mean, she coached them during the COVID year. Mm-hmm. So she had that, you know, sense of the respect there. But she's kind of, from Coach Sue to Coach Wyckoff, she has totally flipped the program in the way they play. They play more fast-paced now than what normal college teams, high school teams are, you know, or what high school teams are teaching, what college teams are running. They're running at a faster pace. But I've been screaming the same thing. How are they not ranked? If you look at them, I'm going to pull their
– Yeah, they lost to Oklahoma State. Lost to UConn, lost to Boston College in OT, and then just dropped one to Louisville. So 16 of them, they should be ranked.
But then you look at other teams like, say, Tennessee's and stuff like that, you know, that always get that SEC bias in my eyes. You know, it's just like college football. They get that SEC bias. But, I mean – I don't get it. When they played UConn, I said the same thing. You know, if you pulled up their record, UConn's record at that time, they were identical. You know, they've only dropped. I mean, Patrick, what was their record?
16.
Yeah, they've only lost four games.
Yeah. So, I mean, how are they not, whenever you look at the, you know, the rankings, which I'm going to try to get it real quick.
Yeah, the rankings, and, I mean, there's – I mean, Iowa's 14-4, number 10. Maryland, 14-4, 11. Iowa State, I mean, Arizona.
North Carolina has five losses and they're ranked 17th. It's just
exactly.
NC State, five losses.
And they beat NC State. They they handled NC State at home and they put a number upon them and they're somehow, I don't know. It's frustrating, but I mean it's what's best.
What gets me though is you go down, like if you go to ESPN, look down at the rankings, you go to the bottom, who's receiving votes. They're still not receiving a lot of votes from the AP. I mean, this past time, they only received 23 votes to be in the top 25. So it's like, you know, are y'all that scared of them to, you know, are you that scared to put them in the top 25? Because, I mean, I would. They're one of the best teams in the nation. They got one of the best, you know, guards in the nation in Natiya Latson. But, guys, we're going to play this little video right now and then come back and choose our players of the week. All right, guys. Champions Way Sports, Elite Player of the Week, brought to you by Nations Elite. It's the one right there somewhere. And I'm going to let Matt go first on this one. Matt, who do you got as your Player of the Week this week?
I got Worley. I mean, I really like what Worley's doing. He's not as consistent as Matthew Cleveland. Excuse me. But I think he helps serves the drink for that team. I think when he's on the floor he's really blossomed this year, I guess, to try to get at. And so he might not put up the biggest numbers, but he's a fighter on defense, and he's kind of a guy that I'm going to like watching play for the next 2 years.
Yeah. What about you, Patrick?
I'll play well and actually pick a player this week. I'm going to go with Cleveland. You know, the amount of double-doubles he's putting up right now and the effort he put in the last few games, you know, he's still garnered that in my eyes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go off the college level. I'm going to go pros. And, I mean, what Asante Samuel Jr. did, three picks.
We love our new home. There's so much space. But we have ants. Expired.
It's playing a little clip right now. But
I hope you can keep it clean. At least Geico makes it.
But three interceptions. I mean, there in the first half, he caught more passes from Trevor Lawrence than Trevor Lawrence's receivers did. But at the end, you know, Sunshine pulled it out, you know, wanting to go to the Waffle House later, but that's mine. I think, you know, I think he even had three tackles. Yeah, he had three interceptions, three tackles, six pass defenses. I mean, that's my player of the week. And speaking of that, I mean, Matt, how happy are you that the Jags moved on? Because I know you're a big Jags fan.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked. I was at that game. It was bittersweet to see Sunday Samuel pick all those passes off. Like, all right, well, it's going to be anybody. It needs to be Derwin or Asante. But I was at the game. It was the very, very top row. Froze my butt off. Watched the epic comeback. Two of my friends left at halftime. They were down 27-7. So stuck it out, though. It's probably why I'm sick today.
Yeah. I mean, that was one heck of a game. It was. So, I mean, I got to ask, and looking at it, they got the Chiefs next Saturday, mm-hmm. I think it is.
4:30, yep.
Yep, 4:30 on NBC. How do you think your Jags are going to do?
You never know. I mean, you're one of the last eight standing for a reason. You got a good quarterback, and you can look at last year and Joe Burrow, what he did against the Chiefs. So, there's always a chance. I'm not going to put any real money on the Jags, but I'm going to go in with hope and hope like hell they play well and at least keep it competitive. I don't think they're – I mean, they're playing hot as hell right now. And I think if you're the Chiefs, you're kind of nervous that they had a half like that and you're hoping they don't want to – you don't want to let them carry it over into this game. So we'll see. I mean, I would rather play the Bills. I wanted the Ravens to win so we could play the Bills, but – yeah, the Chiefs are unbeatable. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, I mean, who are you going to pick for on this one?
You know, it's hard to, you know, pull for Sunshine there. But I'm going to pull for the Jags. You know, let's get some new blood in there. Change the playoffs a little bit for the NFL.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't really follow NFL because – to me, it's just not as passionate in my eyes as college is because, you know, the whole – we've all seen it. The players just sometimes don't care. I mean, I hate to say it. Look at the Bears and Houston. They tanked their season just to try to get the number one pick in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I don't follow. If I had to follow it, you know, it'd probably be the Jags or the Falcons or somebody that's close to the house. But I hate to say it, but I love the combination, just like in college, of Lawrence and ETN. that's a combination that, I mean, we've seen it as Florida State fans. How many times did that them two kill us? You know, oh, just
tons.
You know, I'm gonna go with the Jags because I think the Chiefs are. I think they're a good team. I think they're really. I mean, honestly, if you look at them on paper, they're the better team. But like you said, Matt, you know, they're not unbeatable. Mm-mm. They can be beat. And I think the Jags coming off the win, the way they won against the Chargers, they're playing the hot hand right now. So, and they're playing where? They're playing in Kansas City. The only thing they got to worry about, I mean, does the war chant that Kansas City play, does it rattle old Sunshine and ETN? But,
and they're used to hearing it. I mean, it's nothing new for them.
Yeah.
Same exact.
Yeah. And, I mean, then what's the weather going to be like? You know, it could be freezing and snow. You know, you don't know how he's going to. But I think, I mean, I'd pick the Jags in a close one on that.
That'd be nice. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, when was the last time the Jags made it this far?
2017. They won the AFC Championship game in 17 with Blake Bortles and Jalen Ramsey on their defense. So. They lost the Patriots. I don't know what the score was, but it was close. So we'll see. I mean, it could definitely happen, but I think I'd rather have the Bills instead of the Chiefs. But you could always play the rust card if you're the Chiefs that didn't play last week, could get a slow start, capitalize. They'll figure it out. Doug Peterson's a hell of a coach.
Yeah, he is, and this is Champions Way. We cover Florida State. We cover a lot of sports, but that's a big upgrade from the guy they had last year.
Screw that guy. I actually wrote a blog. Like, I mean, I don't get a lot of things right. But, like, this is one thing I'm going to pat myself on the back for. I wrote a blog when they hired him, Urban Meyer, and I said, like, I don't think this is going to work out. Like, everyone on Twitter, like all Jack's Twitter was all about Urban Meyer, and I was probably one of the only sites that I read that was saying at the time, this is a bad hire. And I didn't do it from like a Florida State versus Florida angle. I did it from like a historical college coaches going up to NFL. It typically doesn't work out. And I used Spurrier. He did terrible. He did not pan out at all. And Urban Meyer turned out to be one of the worst coaches of all time in the NFL.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and I'm going to say this, and I've told it to many people. At least he didn't have to fake a heart attack to leave the Jags like he did Florida, you know, or – you know, what was it with Ohio State? He needed time away and a break.
Yeah.
You know, at least he didn't have all that. But I thought that was a bad hire from the get-go. That was almost as bad a hire as Willie Taggart in my eyes. But
I was on the wrong side of that, though. I said I love that Willie Taggart hire.
So. Yeah. Have y'all heard the rumors, though, right now?
Mm-mm.
Was that from the Rogue 03 on 3 account?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's true, but I mean, we've heard Deion's going to try to bring him there. Deion's even went on record saying he'll be there soon. But then, I mean, the whole thing this past week I seen, and that I think it's just a coy little somebody making fun of it. But I actually went online and seen where somebody back in December wrote about possibility of Willie Taggart bringing Lethal Simplicity to Miami for the Hurricanes. And then that's kind of took fire right now, but Miami's a dumpster fire. I'm gonna be honest. How much worse could it get if you bring Willie Taggart in as your offense coordinator?
Pretty bad. I couldn't see that. I mean, Taggart going to work for a guy who was under him at one point at Oregon. You know, that he was Cristobal was Taggart's O-line coach. And was noticeably on record upset with Taggart for leaving. So I'd be surprised if that even happened.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still I don't get it. I mean, they're losing players left and right down there, just like Florida is. And Florida's debacle with Rashada getting even worse, you know. But
do you think the $13 million was is real or not real?
I think it was a promise, mm-hmm. and I think that promise fell through. Something happened, and I think it was Florida shooting herself in the foot, promising something they knew they probably couldn't handle. And, you know, the boy getting his feelings hurt or something and deciding to leave.
You got the Sentinel, Orlando Sentinel, and the Athletic both saying that number is a thing. So, I mean, if it was like, you know, a random message board saying it, I wouldn't have believed it. But you've got legit reporters put the name behind it. Yeah. I mean, that's the number they're being told, and that's not their actual number. But either way, whatever the number was or is, Florida didn't follow through at all, and they bailed on it. And that's it. Yeah. If you're Florida, you got to be really frustrated. If you're Florida fan, you be really frustrated with the organization. And I don't even blame the kid. Like, if I'm told, go cut the grass for it, I'm going to give you $50. I said, all right, I cut half the grass, and you come out and say, oh, I don't have $50 for you, I'm going to stop cutting the grass. You know, I'm just going to do something. If you're not going to fall through the deal, I'm out. So the kid's definitely not a kid. I'm glad Florida State's not recruiting him because he sounds like he's super wishy-washy. But I don't blame him. If that's the price point they set at and they said back at the last minute, I don't blame him for wanting out.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. I looked him up, and he wasn't even a player that Florida State recruited. Like, they didn't even go after him. So,
he's a top 40 recruit. He's not even a top 10 recruit. He's a top 40. So,
yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing with me is if they didn't even go after him, then what does that really say about him? Mm-hmm. You know, and from what we'll say a source, because I don't want to throw a name out right here on the show of who I met and talked to this past weekend at Junior Day, but he gave me a lot of insight. He said that one of the first things that Mike Norvell and this staff asks is, are you here for you and to better yourself and your career, or are you here for NIL money? And if that player's first answer is, well, I want an NIL deal, they don't go after him because his heart and his mind's not in the right spot in this coaching staff's mind. And it shows. I mean, how many kids is bolted school or changed, you know, transferred and all that because of NIL money?
Yeah.
I mean, then you look at it, and I mean, I know – we can say NIL money helped keep a couple of them here, but you look at Trey Benson, could have went to the league, maybe third, fourth round pick. Jared Verse, I mean, he would have been top 20. That's big money. He's staying. I mean, you look, I mean, just Lawrence Toafili and like CJ Campbell I met this weekend, you know, they done nothing but speak highly about this coaching staff and what the culture is now. And I think, honestly, NIL, I love it at times, but then there's times that I think it's ruining college football. So, I mean, Patrick, I mean, what's your mindset on that?
I mean, they're going to get NIL under control. I'm not saying they need to cap it, but kind of watch what's going on with it, because we're seeing some of these things, you know, with the Florida kid, you know, whatever it is, what we've lost out on potentially with even some of our own players, but us retaining them is also key. I think NIL is more of a, you know, hey, after you're in and you're established and you're doing something, then that's when you should really start getting paid. I mean, how many kids have we seen five stars come at, you know, top 10 out of high school and bust? The rate's low, but it's still there. It still happens. I mean, you know, we don't have a Bryce Young's all time. Winston's coming in that are going to ball out. And on top of the transfer portal, you know, that really creates that interesting dynamic of how some of these kids are moving around. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what a certain Pac-12 school is going to do with NIL, given who their coach is.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you build your recruiting class off NIL, You'll just have what Texas A&M had this past year, where it's not a good culture fit. Guys are there for a year and leave, or whatever the situation is. So I agree that they need to get under control. I like Mike Norvell's approach to it. It sounds like, or from afar, I have no insight in this at all, that they're more, you know, prove yourself, and then you'll, you know, NIL will follow. And then, so if you get kids that buy into that, I think that's the way to go. Obviously, you got to, for different kids, you have to approach it differently. And so far, so good for Florida State. But because things could happen like at Florida where things are promised aren't delivered, because you are depending in here in the state of Florida on outside entities to do this and guys to donate the money, or people to donate the money, and if the money doesn't show up, it doesn't show up, which is challenging. A challenging way to recruit.
Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, we're going to kind of skip ahead and kind of hit on a big topic that Patrick brought up, and I'm going to kind of play a video here in just a second, but if y'all have ever heard Norvell talk in a locker room or a press conference or, I mean, his coaching introduction speech, he kind of has the feeling, I mentioned it last week, of an old Southern preacher, you know. And right now I'm going to turn on a clip real quick. We're going to watch it, and then afterwards we're going to discuss, you know, has he saved this program through the portal?
Well, thank you, and this is a great day to be a Seminole. You know, I say it all the time, right? The people make the place, and today's about people. Yes, we are embarking on an incredible facility that is a monumental, right, project for not only where we are, but where we're going. But it's because of people that have made this happen. To the Dunlap family, we're so grateful for all the support, for all the great boosters, the donors, President McCullough, A.D. Offer, Chairman Collins, the great board that we have. We're so grateful for your investment. Because it's one thing to talk about the finances that are being invested. It's another thing with the passion, the time, the sacrifice. Right? The young men that I get to coach, they invest every day, giving their all. Their spirit, their passion, their hard work, and their dedication. We talk about our climb every single day. And there are great days ahead for Florida State. These young men, they have come together, and they understand who we represent. They've invested in building that foundation, and we have an incredible foundation that we've been able to establish. And with this facility that is coming, it's one that we will respect. We will respect, right, the expectation, that standard of excellence, right, in everything that we do. I'm so proud to represent this program. I'm so proud to be able to lead this group of young men that are challenging themselves in everything that they do. On the field,
guys, I mean, watching that right there, I mean, you get the feel, you know, like I say, Southern preacher. I had to change out my camera and all that, and everything was, that's why I had to come off screen. But look at what Mike Norvell inherited in 2019. I mean, a dumpster fire of a program, in my eyes, to what it is now. I mean, Matt will let you kick this one off. Did you know who Norvell was to whenever he got hired, and what was your thoughts of him like during that first season?
I definitely had heard of him. I had watched Memphis play. I didn't know anything about him. You know, I didn't know much about him. I think I watched a Memphis game or two, and so I'd seen him before. But I had no problem with him hiring him. I can't remember who I actually wanted back then. I think I was always kind of cool with Norvell. I didn't know much about him to answer your question. I knew he existed and who he was, but I saw the success at Memphis, and I was cool. I was on board.
Yeah. Patrick, I mean, what was your thought of him?
I told you a little story. I was actually at the car wash one day cleaning the car, and there was an FSU guy beside me. He's like, "Hey, you might want to look at this Norvell cat. He's going to be our next guy." And this was weeks, you know, a week or two before the hire became public. And so I went and looked at it, and I was seeing some good things there. And I was trying to go through naysayers of like, "Hey, that's Justin Fuentes' system he built there, and Norvell's just implementing it." But then looking at his history, how he came up through, I was kind of feeling it. Kind of some of the expectations he was setting, he was definitely trying to flip the culture, and that's what we needed. Our culture, from what I understand, I can't speak to it, I didn't see it, but what I saw from TV was it was individuals. It was not a team. And I kind of like where he came out that conference. It was more excited. And I think his expectations level set it better. I think if Willie would have came in with a different of this isn't a rebuild, this is a reload, versus Mike was like, hey, we got some time. We got some work to do. Kind of set those expectations. I think that helped him too, is painting the right picture of where the program was at and understanding the dumpster fires that we had and some of the gaps that obviously we had to fill through the point of the transfer portal. If we didn't have the transfer portal, God, I don't think Mike would be here right now.
Oh yeah, no. Not at all. He is the portal king. Oh, you're on mute, Jeff.
My bad, again. But that right there goes to show, you know, what he's done. And I'm going to pull up something real quick and so the people that's watching the live stream can see. You know, in 19, you look at this team. Points per game, we were 67th in the country out of 130 FBS schools. I mean, the proof's in the pudding right there. I mean, 71st in yards per play, 103rd in yards per rush. I mean, bottom of the barrel. Honestly, bottom of the barrel. That was just offensively. And, I mean, that year was – who was our quarterback beginning of that year? Was it Blackman?
Mm-hmm. It was Blackman.
No, you know, Trent. Was it Blackman 2019?
That was Blackman because that was the year that we lost to Boise State because of the hurricane.
It was supposed to be Francois and he got in trouble and he had to keep
Francois off. Got dismissed and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the worst thing I remember from that season was we had a fumble or something at the like 5 yard line, nobody around.
Yeah,
Seminoles, and Boise State runs down there and recovers it. It's like, come on now. And then you look defensively, same thing. Sacks per game, 39. You know, third down conversion percentage, 87. You know, you mean the proof's right there in the pudding. Points per game, we were 74. We was only scoring, or we was allowing 30 points a game, and allowing 5.46 yards a carry or per play. Which was 47. Then Norvell come in, and I'm not really going to hit on that, the 2020 season because it was COVID, but it did bring in, like we mentioned, some transfers, and like we're seeing right here, the 2020 year, I mean, out of all of them, the one pictured right there above 2020, Fabian Lovett, to me, out of that whole crew right there besides Jayshon Corbin, is probably the biggest impact transfer from Norvell's first season here. Patrick, I mean, what's your thoughts on that 2020 transfer class?
I mean, that started setting the foundation. I mean, even when we had Love Taylor coming in, I mean, it was an upgrade to the line. It wasn't a great one, but it was an upgrade. And he started focusing on the areas that we needed attention. You know, I heard some backstory from Jayshon's cousin about, you know, has his life at AM versus when he came back to FSU. But Lovett, you know, shows that was a key element, and he's still here to finish that out. But Love Taylor, I think, was another key element that started our O-line transformation. Yeah. You know, wasn't the greatest upgrade, but it was something.
Yeah. But you look at 2020 and you got what? 7 transfers that come in. A ton went out. But then you look 2021, and granted, there's some names on here like A.J. Lighton that nobody heard about. He transferred out the next year. D.J. Williams came from Auburn and was Auburn's leading rusher the year prior to 2021. Didn't amount really to much in that season. But you look, to me, that 2021 recruit – go ahead.
I was saying he did get a couple touchdowns. I do remember Williams a little bit. He did get a few touchdowns. He played a role.
Yeah, he played a role. But I got a bunch of friends that are Auburn fans, and from what I seen the year prior to that year, it was like he wasn't what he was at Auburn.
But to me, yeah, that I mean, one.
This also, you had a. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to just add, in that running back room, you had Corbin, emergence of Ward, and then you also had Tolo Feely. So he just kind of came in and played that depth role, I think. I guess that was my whole point. Like I get what you're saying. Like, he didn't come in and start, didn't flash. But Corbin balled out in 21. Tolo Feely, was a good out of the backfield. And Trayshon Ward had his breakout season as a good college back. So I think he came in to compete, and he got out. He just got, swallowed up, and he got a few touchdowns. He played his backup role well.
Yeah, but really, to me, that 2021 season, that transfer class set the foundation. There was like a small handful that didn't pan out or what we thought they would be. A certain quarterback that everybody was high on. But you look at Kier Thomas, Jamie Robinson, Dylan Gibbons, Andrew Parchment. He didn't do a ton, but he done enough, 4th and 14. To me, that the 2021 transfer set the foundation really to kind of seeing the improvement. 2021 yards per play offensively was 5.79. We started improving year by year, from Norvell's first year, trying to fix the dumpster fire that Jimbo and Willie, which kind of left, and started improving there. And we look at the defensive side, it starts getting back to about the 50-ish range. We were giving up 30 points a game under Taggart. 19, 2021, got it down to 26.5 yards per play, 5.18, and all that. But then, really, that was kind of, to me, the breakout year for Jordan Travis, because we all knew what he could do, but we knew we had to get help. We had to get playmakers around him. Norvell knew that. And then they brought in this past year's. And, none bigger than the man right there, number three, Trey Benson. I honestly don't think there's been a running back transfer or recruit that's had a bigger breakout season in my eyes than Trey Benson. What about you, Matt? What do you think about that?
I think it's Dylan Gibbons, and is my, like, out of the three classes he's running, Dylan Gibbons helped reset that offensive line. He brought a different level of commitment and work ethic for that offensive line, and it helped Alex Atkins take the next step and show the other guys on that team how to compete and how to beat on the offensive line. There's a litany of guys. You can look at Jermaine Johnson. Obviously, is a home run hit, and also helped you get Jared Verse, But it showed the blueprint to across the country that Florida State is a place you can come and thrive and turn yourself into a high draft pick if you're willing to work for it. So I think those two guys to me were huge and helped create this 2022 transfer class. Without those two guys, this 22 transfer class would not have happened.
I agree with that. Because you mentioned Gibbons. You look at what Dylan's story was. That kind of led to the Dimitri Emmanuel and the Justin Turntime, mm-hmm. The Bless Harris, the Caden Lyles coming here. And by – what was it Dylan Gibbons always done? When he got the line, he fist bumped the guys next to him. Kind of a brotherhood and I got your back type thing. And I want to say it was Emmanuel or Turntime that said that's the first time he's ever been on the offensive line that he felt like he knew in his heart that the man next to him had his back. And those two boys were established offensive linemen at Charlotte and South Carolina. But Patrick, what's your thoughts on that? Which out of these recruiting classes right here, which recruiting class do you think is the one that's laid the foundation for where we're at now?
I think the 21 class laid the foundation. That put forth the, hey, this, if you come here and you put the work in, this is where you can get rewarded out there. And there was plenty of opportunity in the 21, and I think which helped to lay that foundation for 22 to really go out there. And, you know, looking at this list, you know, we haven't lost much from it. Feaster left, but seeing what we got to come back and see how it's improved. And I think the 21 laid the foundation that, you know, with Gibbons and Johnson to open that door to get Emmanuel in here. And I don't know if y'all have been watching Emmanuel, but there's word that we're applying for a seventh year for him. That would be huge for our O-line. And then, you know, rolling the dice on some of the guys, you know, it still paid off. There was plenty of questions about Trey going into the season of, hey, is he going to be healthy enough to put anything up there? I know Ingram Smith, you know, puts a lot with that. And then looking at, you know, the other guys we brought in, I think it really set forth that, hey, if you come in, you put in the work, you're going to get the chances. And I think a lot of these guys in the transfer portal needed that chance. And unfortunately, the transfer portal, most of them don't get that chance. I can't remember the percentage off the top of my head, but it wasn't good if the kids that transferred to actually get a job, so to speak, at another school. It's very low rate. So I think 21 set up 22 to be successful. And it'll be interesting to see how we handle 23.
I mean, they've already got a heck of a portal class already. They got the number one portal class, if not top five portal class. I guess it depends on what service you're looking at. But, I mean, you got Cypress, the Byers from UTSA. Another guy from the defensive end South Carolina, which is, you know, helps you provide a depth piece. You got the best defensive tackles out of the portal. So, I mean, you definitely can build a team and add spots. I don't think it's something you can rely on year in, year out. I think you've got to really still build some key pieces through the transfer through the high school ranks, specifically on the offensive and defensive lines, because you're not going to have, you know, first round talent offensive tackle to show up whenever you want. So you got to get that out of high school. But definitely skill players and guys like that can definitely be brought in via the portal really easily.
I mean, you look at it. We mentioned it. I mean, and the topic was, has Norvell saved us through the portal? I believe he has. Like we all hit on, you look at the 2022 and you look, you know, Demetri Vandal and Turntime, but Bless Harris was injured. What was the LSU game?
Before the
LSU game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was a promising offensive lineman. It sucked what happened to Caden Lyles. I wish, you know, they could get another year for him. But you turn that around and you look at this year and you got Keandre Jones from Auburn, Jeremiah Byers from UTEP. You got, I mean, the list goes on. You got didn't we get one from Colorado?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Starter, too.
I mean, yeah. I mean, so you look at that. I mean, this offensive line is that's really where it needed to be built. That's where we were struggling for years past was the offensive line. We couldn't get the offensive line fixed, so we couldn't get everything else fixed. So, think in my eyes, you know, Norvell has –
I'll say real quick, think about where the offensive line was in 2018 and 2019, and even 2020. Like it was the worst offensive line in the country. And now you're talking about you're bringing in guys who started at Power Five schools before, and they're going to be depth pieces at best. I mean, it's pretty impressive what they've done and how they turned that room around. Credit Alex Atkins for sure. I turned that room around in 3 years.
And we got to keep making sure we pay the man that money for Atkins.
Yeah. Which, I'll be honest with you, it scared me last night. I don't know how much y'all get on Twitter, but his wife posted something about Tennessee just got better at the offensive line or something like that. And it almost scared me to death thinking that Atkins was gone to be at the Titans or offensive line coach. But I hadn't seen anything. I'm not going to report on it if you know, Atkins needs, I mean, we're paying OC pay out of the line pay. I think he's that key piece we've been missing, because you look at years prior, we had, and you know, I think Jimbo held on to Trickett a little too long. Then you look, Willie brought in, was it Fryer? He was an offensive lineman here years ago. That didn't pan out. And then when Kendall come in, he brought in Clements with him, and it didn't pan out. And I think with the portal and with recruiting, especially recruiting these days right now, you're seeing the foundation and the relationships being built, and the foundation with a coaching staff that's been here multiple years in a row and not, you know, the plug pulled out of them like Willie had. And like, I mean, Jimbo just gave up in my eyes right at the end, but with a solid foundation, solid coaching class that these kids know is going to be here for years to come, they're buying in. So, I mean, I think he has, but like Matt, like you said, I think he needs to kind of hit the high school ranks a little hard these next few years, start building that depth. You know, not relying so much on the portal.
I mean, that's what the whole, you got to think, it's what helped spur the Surtain hire. You got a guy who got real South Florida ties, you know, coached American Heritage, played at the Dolphins, coached for the Dolphins. So he's going to help you. You got a new recruiter, you know, because right now I think it's kind of a two or three man show there with Atkins, Norvell, and Papuchis are your main recruiters, and Odell is probably four man show, excuse me. And then you need some help, and then they got help with Surtain. So hopefully that, you know, that's part of the move. Is you got a guy who can help you in the high school ranks via recruiting.
Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, Patrick, I mean, what's your thoughts on it to kind of close this topic out?
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, we needed the portal. We didn't have the relationships. I mean, the COVID year destroyed the chances to get in there to build a relationship with the schools. And we're starting to see the coaches out more at the schools. I can confirm Mike Norvell was just in the Warner Robins area. Checking out some players around here. I hadn't heard that in previous years. So I think they're finally getting this relationship established so we can start working the high school ranks a little bit better to get those players. I think we had to rely on the transfer portal because we didn't have the relationships, and everyone on the staff came in. Very few had the connections in the schools. And we all know it goes through the coaches. The coaches don't know you. They ain't gonna let them come and see the kids on some of them. Some of it's the parents that control it too. But I think we got that relationship, and then we started to have to prove ourselves. And I think that's now the kids that are coming up, they see that Florida State is being successful. Now the hype train is there. We're seeing a better turnout for junior days versus last year's, which was very disappointing. But I think this year's was putting us up in a better position. So I think we're getting there. Those established relationships is, yeah, we use the portal to our success. Now we're transitioning to building that bench better.
Yeah. And, I mean, junior day is past first one. There's the next. Go ahead, Matt.
I'll say, aren't they like top 10 for 24 right now? God, the 30 rankings?
I think they're like, yeah. I think they're like seventh.
Yeah.
Last so time I looked at it.
Cause as we know, like it's awesome that they won 10 games, but that doesn't do anything for their 23 recruiting class. It's about what you did the year prior. And so going winning 10 games this past season should help with 24 and 25.
Yeah, 24 right now is number four class.
On what site?
24/7.
All right.
Can't be that. I mean, you look at it, the years, I mean, honestly, you look at it, what class made it possible for us to win the 2013? You know, it was 2009, 2010, 11. Yeah. And it took a little bit of time for even Jimbo to kind of get the recruits in. I think mm-hmm. Norvell's on that year to where we're going to get a flow with him. Because every kid, I'm telling you, there wasn't all these other shows out here, and I'm not going to try to speak bad on them because there's some of them I'm friends with, some of them I'm not. But for some of them to go out and say, I know this, I know that, it kind of irks me, kind of, because I know two other, like, websites that was out there in the freezing 50-degree cold, and there was three total. One was this show, one was War Chant, and one was Noel's Game Day. And all the other ones, there wasn't nobody else. 50 degrees, we're out there freezing our balls off. But they're out here recruiting on it, like, you know, talking about that there. But every player or every recruit and every parent that come out of the Moore Center said the same thing. They love the atmosphere around Dope Campbell Stadium and Florida State with this coaching staff. And a certain guy that I'm not going to name his name, me and him talked for a while, brought up the point that people are comparing Mike Norvell to Bowden, how he recruited and got on a personal level. And this guy told me, yeah, that's true. He said, but Mike Norvell is better at it. He said, I was here during the Bobby era. During those times, he said, Mike Norvell is better at it. He said he's more personable with it. He gets more into your family and stuff like that. I mean, we've seen the videos of him singing Happy Birthday. But, I mean, for that guy that's been was here during the Bobby Bowden era, the Jimbo era, the Willie era, now the Norvell, and he can say that Norvell and this staff is in his eyes, better recruiters than Bobby Bowden era was whenever he was covering them. To me, that speaks volumes, because I've spoke to former players that, I mean, Tony Yeomans talked about Bobby Bowden sitting down eating fried chicken in his kitchen with his mama, and I think with the way he is with this team winning games, I think that the sky's the limits. I think recruiting is going to get fixed by that, because last year there wasn't but maybe a small handful of juniors at junior day. This year, weekend one, there's over 20. Next weekend, I think it's going to be more than that. So that's my thing. Guys, I mean, before we call it a show and all that, anything y'all want to talk about before we end it?
No, I mean, I think they're going to win tomorrow night. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Now,
what about you, Pat?
Baseball's coming right around the corner. I don't know. They shared some of the renovations they've done there to the field there. So it's good to see that, you know, that's there. It's what, the 18th of February. I think it's our first game. So definitely going to make some trips down to catch some baseball games. So looking forward to that new era for baseball with no Martins in it for the first time in a long time. I think my entire life. Mm-hmm.
48 years, I think it is. Martin hadn't been at the helm or been on the staff. 48 years. I think I got it wrote down because we were going to do that baseball segment last week. I think it's 48 years since Martin had been on the coaching staff. It's 45 years, I think it is, that Martin had a coach.
Long time.
So that tells you a lot right there. But also, you know, I don't know if y'all seen the tweet. Saturday, February 11th, the baseball team is holding a fan day and a scrimmage. And I believe it's free to the public and all that. So that'd be something for anybody watching, listening, to go take advantage of. Because, I mean, I know I'm excited about that. And I'm also excited about the softball kicking off, because I think they're going to be hungry to try to get back to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. I've been to that fan day. It's good. It's fun.
Yeah. I wish football would do it again.
Yeah, I see why they don't do it.
That's my thing. Yeah, so do I. But, you know, I wish they would, because, I mean, I took one of my kids there. What was it? Oh, 16, I think it was. and he loved it. I mean, his eyes lit up, especially the cheerleaders. But, you know, he didn't care much about the football players. He was looking more at the cheerleaders. But guys, we're going to call it a wrap. So if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like, subscribe, double thumbs up. If you're listening to us on a podcast, wherever you're listening on, give us a 5-star review. As for Matt, Patrick, myself, guys, hope you have a great week and go Noles.
30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Florida State.
Right to his head, to the 5, touchdown, Florida State. He's got PK Sam open, he makes the catch, touchdown, FSU.